You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 166. Today's episode is all about a family-owned Italian kind of roadhouse place on the West Bank of New Orleans. The last show was an interview with Neil Bodenheimer. Actually, it wasn't an episode with Neil Bodenheimer, now that I think about that. It was an episode about the Italian-American Cultural Center down right off Chapultepec by the Piazza d'Italia. It was really interesting. They do a lot of stuff at the Cultural Center. There's a neat museum there. They help with dual citizenship services. They help with transcription services. There's a lot going on, and it's a really cool small museum. As we're about to head into Saints season, if you find yourself staying down there, say at the old 77 or somewhere nearby, it's definitely worth a quick 30-minute visit just to check it out. And that kind of ties in a little bit to the episode today, which is also going to get to our Italian and Sicilian heritage. But before we do that, I want to talk about the people that make this show possible. The Historic New Orleans Collection provides support as the city's premier history museum, located at 520 Royal Street in the heart of the French Quarter. Check out their online publication called First Draft. It's kind of a combination of a blog and an online exhibition space. You can find it at thnoc.org/firstdraft. And we'll put links to that and everything we talk about today in the show notes, so you don't have to take notes. But it's a really cool, they've started to use it again to kind of preview some things they're doing, as well as to just sort of share some stuff that's not going to make it into the in-person exhibition space. Starting on October 20th, 2022, and running through January 22nd, the Historic New Orleans Collection is going to present an exhibit called or entitled Spanish New Orleans and the Caribbean. While we call the original city, of course, the French Quarter, there's an amazing amount of Spanish influence there. And the exhibit's going to include about 125 pieces, not only from the Historic New Orleans Collection's own collection, but as well as from museums throughout the United States and Spain. And again, you can kind of get a sneak preview of that on their First Draft site. So go to hnoc.org/visit to plan your trip. One of the most frequent questions we get are about moving to New Orleans. If you're ready to make the move, you need a good realtor, and that's where Liz Wood comes in. Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place. They can help whether you plan to rent or purchase. Liz makes that process really fun and easy, so reach out to her at LizWoodRealty.com and make your dream of living in New Orleans a reality. And what I would say, particularly those of you that have visited or maybe you thought about moving, or maybe you've purchased my book, New Orleans is a city of neighborhoods, and it can be a little bit difficult to try to figure out what neighborhood is right for you. And that's where Liz really makes a difference. And while you're working with Liz, you're probably going to need to secure financing. That's where my friend Tommy Manzella over at Gulf Coast Mortgage really plays a role. Reach out to Tommy and let him help you finance everything, get it all in place. We did that with our refi about, gosh, now 2 years ago, and it went as smooth as it could be. 6 months later, we thought about buying another place, so we went through the whole origination process. Again, perfectly smooth. We'll put links in the show notes, but Tommy Manzella over at Gulf Coast Bank. Finally, last but not least, before we get into the topic, many of you know I have a book, The Beyond Bourbon Street Insider's Guide to New Orleans, officially released on May 1st. You can find it online at all major retailers like Amazon, Bookshop, Barnes & Noble, and more. In the city, you can find it at Octavia Books, Blue Cypress, The OW, which is a kind of an antique secondhand furniture store located at 2850 Magazine, has it. Flirty Girl in the French Quarter has copies, as does our partners NOLA T-Shirt Club on Magazine. And if you go to their website, nolatshirtclub.com, they have autograph copies. So if you want an autograph copy and you're not in town and can't hook up with me, I signed all of their copies, so you can get a copy there as well. If you love the show, the podcast, in New Orleans, please consider picking up a copy. And for more in the book, you can check out episode 157. With all that out of the way, let's jump into today's topic. My guest has been sitting here very patiently. As I mentioned at the top, today's episode is about a place called Mosca's. It's well known and loved by New Orleanians, but I venture to say it's a place that maybe if you've only been to New Orleans once or twice, you might not have heard of. It's a family-owned restaurant I would say well off the beaten path. Even all these years, it's still a little off the beaten path. But to talk about the restaurant's past, its present, its future, I'm joined by Lisa Mosca. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing very well.
I was so excited. So we have a joint friend, Scott Walker, who I know helps you guys out with some PR. Scott is a Brother Martin grad like myself. Reached out to me and said, hey, have you ever done a show on Mosca's? And I thought, gosh, not only have I not done a show, I haven't been to Mosca's in forever. And so that seemed like a great idea.
Yes.
So what I want to do first is I want to talk about the past and your family's history and certainly where you guys are gone. But first, let's kind of orient people to what is Mosca's and where are we?
Yeah, half the time I don't even know where I am. But we are about 4.5 miles from the UEP Long Bridge on Highway 90 West. I say we're in Avondale. Mm-hmm. There's a postal debate. I think, like, technically we're in West Wego, but we often say Avondale, either one.
Yes, right.
On the west bank of Jefferson Parish.
Yeah. And, you know, I intentionally drove it from downtown, from the corner of Poydras and Loyola, as opposed to my home, because I would have gone across the UEP. And I wanted to get a sense. And it's about 25 minutes. And I did it in the beginning of rush hour traffic.
Oh.
So, you know, 25 minutes isn't bad. If you were a tourist coming to visit the city and wanting to come in slightly off hours, I think that's about right, 20, 25 minutes. You could get an Uber or a ride share out here. Mm-hmm. Certainly, if you had a car, you could make it out here. But it's a little bit removed. You have to make the trek. I think we're going to convince you that it's well worth it to do that. But I think getting back to where it is, we did an earlier episode with Richard Campanella and kind of talked about the history of the West Bank. And as we'll probably get into, where you guys are located, again, whether it's Avondale or West Wego, certainly served the community of shipbuilders and the folks working there.
Yes.
And probably still do, I would imagine, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
I think in the beginning, that was a main part of their business. Because I know when my grandparents first opened the restaurant in 1946, they were just kind of trying to make it. And they would just wake up from their beds if somebody knocked on the door to eat. So it just, you know, it depended on who wanted to eat, and they would open for them.
So let's do that. We'll jump to the beginning, and then we'll circle back to Mosca's today, and we'll certainly get into the food and some of your vision for what's going on going forward. But let's go all the way back to the beginning. And I guess it's your great-grandfather or great-great-grandfather?
My grandfather.
Your grandfather. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So talk about that story a little bit.
So my grandfather, Provino Mosca, and my grandmother, Lisa Mosca, were from Italy, San Benedetto del Tronto, which is the Central Adriatic, which is most New Orleans Italians are Sicilian.
They're Sicilian,
and a lot of people think we are, but we aren't.
Right.
They came to America. They settled in, like, the Chicago area in a town called Chicago Heights, which is on the south side of Chicago. And they opened a restaurant there in the 1920s called Mosca's. And they had three children. The oldest, Nicholas, who had Elmwood Plantation, and was also the chef at Len Fence.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And the middle child, my aunt, Mary. And then the youngest, which was my father, John Mosca. So the two brothers were drafted. My dad was in the infantry. They sent him to Italy. Nicholas was in the army as well. And then during that time, my aunt married someone from New Orleans, an oyster fisherman. So she moved to New Orleans, and my grandparents followed her down here. So that's kind of how they got to this area. And when my dad and his brother came back from the army, I think his brother stayed in the Chicago area, but my dad came back down.
I think there's a couple of things to break apart there. One, you pointed out correctly that New Orleanians tend to call it Mosca's.
Yes.
But it is Mosca.
It's Mosca.
The name, right?
Yes.
I also think that you also said most people in New Orleans that say they're Italian are actually Sicilian.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the Italian cuisine in the city tends to be Sicilian. But that's not true for Mosca's. It's a different style. It's a different region of Italy.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly comes across in the menu, in the style of the food. And then also, I don't know if it's predominantly, but an awful lot of Italians immigrated to New Orleans in the late 1890s and early 1900s. And your family story is different. Mm-hmm. You sort of came through Chicago and then came down because
yes.
of the family, right?
Right, because
and
of the family. Mm-hmm.
After the family. So when did, I think you mentioned it, when did the restaurant here actually open?
1946.
And it's always been run by your family?
Yes.
Continuously?
When they originally came down, they made a deal. It was over the phone with a family on the east bank of Jefferson Parish that it was a restaurant below, it was a living quarters above, and they came down with the intention of taking that over. Mm-hmm. When they got here, the family decided they didn't want to sell it. So they were kind of like displaced for a while. They didn't have a restaurant, and
right.
so that's really how we ended up here, in which at the time was in the middle of nowhere.
Right. It has been in the middle of nowhere through most of its existence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's more developed now than
right,
it's ever
than
been.
Ever.
But I wouldn't call it fully developed.
No.
Like, you're not surrounded by restaurants right next to you. You're
mm-hmm.
not surrounded by shops.
Mm-hmm.
There's the fire station across the highway.
Yes.
Right. And I think for most of its existence, and certainly when I was a kid, it was sort of known as a roadhouse, right?
Right.
It was just
a lot of times it's described as a roadhouse.
Kind of not I'm not sure that's quite fair, but it is still, there's
yeah,
a feel.
I don't
know,
mind it. It's kind of a roadhouse. It's like a, not exactly a hole in the wall, because when you come
no.
in, I think it's deceiving, but.
Definitely. It's definitely a destination.
It's
though.
Definitely a destination.
You know, and I think I can only imagine as I was reading up on your family's history, that idea of, so they move from Chicago, they think they have one deal, they don't, and they end up, which at the time had to be just in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And somehow thinking, well, we're going to live here and we're going to take our family tradition and open a restaurant
mm-hmm.
in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as we talked about at the start, we're not far from the dockyards, and there's still not a whole lot of restaurants right here, even now. So you can imagine back then, probably what they did have going for them is all of a sudden they were offering
right.
food
mm-hmm.
and offering seafood, right?
Mm-hmm.
Offering fresh food.
Correct.
So that's a pretty, had to be kind of a challenging experience.
If I'm correct, I think also at the time there was casinos
mm-hmm.
along the river in this area,
yeah.
and they'd get a lot of that crowd.
And that gets, we'll get into something we were discussing earlier, but my understanding, so I've interviewed Richard Campanella several times. Richard's done a wonderful book, and probably the definitive book on the West Bank. And he talks about the casinos that used to be kind
mm-hmm.
of in this area. And of course, if we hopped back across the Huey P and then went back towards the city a little bit, right at the parish line there were casinos.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Southport Music Hall
right.
is there
yes.
and was a casino. And
mm-hmm.
I think O'Dwyer's was a place.
Mm-hmm.
And what later happened, and I'm sure that your family and certainly that Moscow's played a part in it, is when those casinos would get shut down, people would come to this side
right.
of the river,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. And so maybe we'll jump into now what we were talking about before. So part of that, and certainly not, I don't know anyway, we want to take away from Moscow's and I want to get into the food, but part of that is that New Orleans had a, I'll say, reputable, I don't know, irreputable crime boss named Carlos Marcello, right? he was affiliated with the Genovese crime family, and really the lure of Carlos coming here was that casino industry, right? And
mm-hmm.
and taking a part of that, and he had direct ties to where we're sitting now, right? He was the landlord.
Yes, and his son is the landlord.
And his son,
still.
Right? It's a landlord, right, in New Orleans
mm-hmm.
here today. But my understanding was that was a big part of that. It was the ability to bounce back and forth between the casinos on both sides,
mm-hmm.
and so now when you sort of think about that and think about Moscow's being pretty remote and casinos around it would have wanted to be in a remote area.
Right.
They're trying to escape kind of the authorities
right.
in the city, right?
Mm-hmm.
It made sense. But right, I can also see that those casinos becoming a source of patrons
right.
for your ancestors.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
The other thing about Moscow's that I think has always been true, I think, is that it's always been sort of a family-style restaurant place.
Yes, always.
Right? Mm-hmm. So the portions are enormous.
Big.
And the style of it, not only the food, but the way you guys are set up, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think you described it accurately. From the outside, it's a whitewashed building. It looks pretty simple, and you come in and it feels like you've walked into a home,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's intimate and it feels and looks more upscale, certainly on the inside than
mm-hmm.
it does on the outside.
Yes.
But the tables are set up to accommodate big portions.
Yes. And it's always been family style. And it's interesting because some people don't, that's foreign to them. I think it's become more common mm-hmm. where I'm seeing it in restaurants more now where it's like shared plates.
Right.
But it's interesting when, you know, a group of 20 will come in. I'm like, we serve family style, for especially for large groups. And they're like, well, we can't just order individually. And I'm like, no.
Right.
You know, it's like a family table.
Right. Don't order 20 entrees.
Right. You don't want to do that.
Right. And again, I think in looking through the history, and I was asking some of my family members about it, their early memories of mosques, and that's always been the way, right?
That right, you would come, always.
You would come with friends and family and mm-hmm. celebrate, and you're right, there are a few places that come to mind now that do that, but that's still not super common.
No, it's not very common. And I think part of it is the profit in it, honestly, is less because, you right. know, you can charge more for an individually plated meal. Right. But that's how we've always served, and that's what we're known for, so that's what we do.
Right. I mean, I was trying to think back as early as I can remember coming here. It was always that way. Mm-hmm. Which, incidentally, I think if you're a listener and you haven't been and you come in town with a bunch of friends, or you're looking to kind of meet up with a bunch of friends or family, this is a great kind of destination mm-hmm. to do that.
Right.
Right? Because it's like breaking bread and you know, mm-hmm. on a Sunday afternoon at home. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about your own experience growing up in the business.
We were talking a little about this yeah. earlier, but you know, I grew up in the restaurant since I was an infant. They used to have a crib in the back for me, where I would nap and play. And once they were done cooking, my mom would take me next door and put me to bed. When I was then in school, my mom would literally be frying chickens at the kitchen stove, and I'd be on a stool next to her, and she'd be quizzing me on vocabulary. So it was very much just part of my daily routine. I was here every night we were open. It was just part of my life as a child, and really looking back on it, I would say it was a happy childhood, and it was something I look back on fondly with good memories.
You know, you and I share that in common, and we've talked about that. I grew up in the restaurant, and I wonder if you feel this way. I almost felt like the restaurant was another sibling.
Yeah.
You know, it was so integrated. Now, I have siblings, mm-hmm. but it was so integrated into our right. lives. The studying in the kitchen, yes. the, you know, all those sorts of things.
And I'm an only child, so actually it was kind of like a sibling to me, because I had no brothers or sisters to play with, so I would go, you know, in the front, and if there were kids my age that I thought I could maybe get away with playing in my playroom with, I'd go and ask their parents if they could play with me, and usually they were pretty happy to let them do that.
That's pretty awesome,
so,
right?
Yeah, it was fun. It was yeah. like,
so a meal then like childcare, sort of.
Yeah, childcare.
That's awesome. So how did it come to be? Did you expect to grow up and be an active participant in the family business?
No, I did not, and I can't say it was ever like thrust upon me either. My dad always told me how important it was for me to get an education, and he would tell me the one thing people can't take away from you is your education. So it was always very encouraged for me to go to school, not necessarily to take over the restaurant. And I did go to school. I went to Loyola for undergrad. I went to Tulane, and I got a dual master's. I have a master's in public health and a master's in social work. I had just started kind of, you know, getting my feet and on the ground and like working with kids in New Orleans public schools and doing mm-hmm. group therapy. And I was really enjoying it. And that's when my dad got sick. And, you know, I was looking for a job. I didn't have a job at the time. And so it just made sense for me to come here and to help. Mm-hmm. And then 11 years, 12 years later, you know, I'm still here, which was not the plan.
And now you work alongside your mom.
Yes.
Yeah. And she does a ton of the cooking.
Right? Oh yeah, she's in the kitchen every night. She's prepping. She's in the kitchen cooking every night that we're open.
You know, I think, and again, you and I have talked about this, the restaurant business is hard, but there's also an intimacy to it. Mm-hmm. If you can get along, right?
And right.
some days are
that's a challenge.
Challenge. It's harder
when you
than
work
others.
With your mother.
My parents worked together their entire lives in the restaurant, and then mm-hmm. at various points had the kids in the room, and it's hard. Mm-hmm. But it is also a really kind of, like you said, when it's fun, it's a lot yes. of fun.
Yes. I always tell everyone, work hard, play hard, because, you know, it'll be just rough night, and everyone will be, like, you know, working away. The kitchen will be slammed. The front will be, you know, chaotic. And then, you know, some nights it's just, like, we have fun, and we enjoy mm-hmm. each other. So it's, like, there's a big spectrum of feelings here, you know.
There's
a lot that's going on.
And I don't know. So for listeners, we had a technical problem. We had to re-record the second half of the show. And so I don't know if we talked about this earlier, but there's that, you know, you come in and it's quiet and then there's this crazy rush. Mm-hmm. And the goal, of course, is for your customers not to see that, for them to have their experience. Mm-hmm. But in the back, it can be madness.
Oh, yeah, it's madness.
And sometimes that's a lot of fun. Sometimes it's a lot of stress, but sometimes it's a lot of fun to be back
exactly.
there.
Exactly. I would, you know, sometimes I like to come here when nobody's here and just do work. And it's so peaceful and quiet and so different. And then at night, it's just like a whole other world when there's people in here and they're dancing and they're having fun. The kitchen's like slammed and, you know, we play music in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just it's a fun environment.
And I got to watch that a little bit last night because you and I were recording before you opened. And then I ate the entire menu. Thank you. And watched people slowly come in and gather and the jukebox get ramped up and all of that. And it wasn't a weekend night, right? So obviously it's busier in the weekend. A couple things I want to just hit on kind of randomly. You know, so you grew up here. Obviously it was your family business, is your family business. But you guys have enjoyed a lot of recognition, both locally and nationally. In 1999, you guys won the James Beard Award. So let's talk about that a little bit. For foodies, you probably know the James Beard Award, and you know that it is often associated with the best new chef or the fanciest of restaurants. But there are also regional categories. And you guys won, you can fill me in on the details, but you won a regional sort of Americana Award in 1999.
America's Classics. Mm-hmm. And that's one of my favorite stories because how old was I? I was probably about 14, maybe 15. And my family, you know, we got the James Beard Award. And honestly, like, I don't know at the time if that meant, you know, I don't think they understood what that meant, like, or how prestigious that award is. I mean, they found out quickly after. You know, the James Beard Foundation wanted them to fly to New York, or at least my mom to fly to New York to receive the award at the ceremony. And she's like, I'm so sorry, like, we can't go, we have work. And they were like, we will send you a plane ticket. And she's like, I can afford a plane ticket, we just cannot go, like, we don't close. And back then we didn't, like, we did not close for anything. And to this day she's like, I cannot believe I didn't go receive the James Beard Award. And I was like, I know. But it's a funny story.
But, you know, I think it fits. So one thing, like, some restaurants and chefs open up with an eye towards James Beard. And they put a ton of marketing effort. And, you know, there's a sort of a path that people end up on. But the category that you guys got the James Beard Award in is one that is really different. And I don't know if it's the exact same category, but I think it is. The Hansons of Hanson Snow Blizz. Got a similar award. And I think Dookie Chase got the same award. And what's interesting to me about that is that the businesses that get those awards all would have that very similar response. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what? We have a business to run. We have customers to serve.
Right.
And maybe get the significance, maybe not get the significance, but just think of it. And I think that's sort of the very reason that you achieve that success, right? Because you're focused on being a part of your community and taking care of people and, frankly, just running the business and keeping things going.
Right, exactly.
I think it's amazing. And by the way, so those are three places. If you're sitting there listening with a pencil and a pad, Mosca's and Dookie Chase and Hanson's, if you could manage to work that into a weekend, that would be a pretty darn good weekend, well off of Bourbon Street and very consistent with what we try to talk about and encourage people here. And the shared part there, if I can linger for just a moment, is three families all with a passion and a long history of what it is you do, right? Generations in all cases. So that's a pretty cool thing. I did want to ask you, kind of jumping forward, you know, Mosca's has been around since 1946. You and I have since learned, since we started the recording yesterday, we think it's the oldest restaurant on the West Bank and in Jefferson Parish. But let's talk a little bit about what was the impact with Hurricane Katrina in 2005. We're recording this, of course, the week of the anniversary of Katrina.
So Katrina, actually, now that I think of it, Katrina was the first hurricane we evacuated for, because we never, you know, evacuated before then. So we left. When we got back, the whole kitchen area of the restaurant was demolished either by wind or a tornado or something.
Sure.
And it just, because of the, you know, the nature of how extensive damage was across the area, it just took forever to get it rebuilt.
Yeah,
contractors. And it was just a crazy process. My dad at the time, he was like, look, you know, I'm getting older and I don't know if this is something I want to pursue and, you know, to rebuild. Mm-hmm. So he told my mom, if you want to do it, it's up to you. And she, you know, you're just kind of, what choice are you left with when you have, you know, it's an obligation, but it's also like a gift, you know, it's hard to make that decision. So she chose to rebuild, obviously.
Yeah.
And, you know, it took a while. I think it took like 9 months for us to get back open. But when we did, we were slammed. Like,
sure.
We were slammed pretty consistently for a long time. I mean, people were just happy.
It was such pent-up demand for the
right.
things that people
mm-hmm.
loved and that were part of their lives, right?
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, I don't want to make the show about me, but I mentioned to you, we owned a restaurant for 36 years that was destroyed in Katrina, and my parents made the decision not to reopen. And to this day, all these years later, you know, there's sadness about it, both mm-hmm. in our family, but also in the neighborhood. People
right.
still ask for
right.
those dishes and those recipes mm-hmm. and those, you know, all that stuff. But right, when places like Mosca's reopened, I can remember the sort of craze for wanting kind of that tie mm-hmm. into the past, right?
Right.
Yeah. So did you guys get much impact from Ida last year?
From Ida, it was the power was the issue for everyone,
yeah,
obviously. But for us, it was power. There was some damage. We lost our sign.
We should talk about that in a moment.
Yeah. And so it was just, I think, a couple of weeks, and then we got back on our feet. But yeah, it was mainly the energy problem.
Yeah. And the other thing we should talk about is, so again, we've mentioned you guys are on the West Bank, but geographically, for people that are not familiar, what that also does is put you guys closer to the ever-eroding coastline.
Right.
So you have less protection than the city does across the river. You know, and I think literally you all are getting closer to the Gulf of Mexico every day.
Yeah. I mean, the whole situation is.
Yeah. You know, it's a big issue. But you mentioned the sign in passing. So I think yesterday you and I were talking. The sign, Mosca's is a white, simple building that is a destination. It is easy to pass up. But if you know it, you know it. But that sign has been out there forever. I remember it as a kid. I don't know that it had ever changed. It fell down. You said mm-hmm. you think maybe in a storm, actually, before Ida.
Right. It came down. I, like, drug my feet with replacing it. And then I replaced it probably, like, what was it? It was, like, 3 weeks before Ida. And then I'm like, well, it had a good 20-day run. And then it was down again after the storm.
So. And people freaked out.
Yeah.
I remember our friend Ian McNulty even wrote an article about sort of what's going on. The sign is down mm-hmm. at Mosca's. And then wrote another article when the sign came back up.
Right.
And that's the kind of stuff that passes for news in the New Orleans mm-hmm. culinary world sometimes, because we're so sensitive about losing those really traditional places, right?
Yeah.
So that's pretty funny that, you know, you're dealing with lack of power and people, you know, obviously... For many people, Ida was just as severe in terms of disaster as Katrina and all these things. And what people notice is the sign is gone. And so is Mosca's around.
Right.
I want to talk now a little bit about, you know, you mentioned that your mom's back there cooking right now, actually, while we're doing this. But let's talk a little bit for people that haven't been here about the actual menu, both in terms of how it's different from a Sicilian menu like we talked about, but also what's on the menu, because the menu is delicious and it's not a huge menu. The portions are huge, but it's
right.
not a huge menu.
Mm-hmm.
And every dish is something that you guys are really famous for. Mm-hmm. So kind of walk us through the menu a little bit.
Yeah, we have a very small menu. It's all family style. We encourage people to order family style, which is, and I think I was saying this to you the other day, it's more, I see it more now in some newer restaurants where you have like shared plates,
mm-hmm.
but it's still foreign to some people where they don't understand, you know, you definitely want to share. You don't want to order individually.
Right, definitely.
So everything on the menu is family style. The salad is a jumbo lump crab meat and iceberg salad with jardinera. It feeds 2 to 3 people. And then, you know, we have whole chickens cut up into about like 10 to 12 pieces. A dozen shrimp would be the shrimp Mosca. And then there's the baked oysters, which is like served in a pie pan. It's just, you know, the portions are large.
They
because
are.
They're intended to be shared.
Yeah. So again, I think the entire menu last night. It was very embarrassing as the restaurant opened and I was sitting at a table with, you know, seven plates of food. But you're right. It definitely is one of those things. And you and I have talked about it. It's not necessarily from a revenue perspective, probably the best model.
No, we talked about that.
Yeah, because you could get more for a plate.
Right.
Plate it up.
Individual and me and my mom talk about that because it's, you know, obviously like a plated meal that you'd serve somebody with like one piece of chicken, a vegetable and a starch. It's just going to be more cost efficient.
Right.
When you serve like a whole chicken or you serve, you know, a big pie pan of oysters, which is, this, you know, similar to oyster dressing to a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's just, it's more expensive for us to make. And, you know, there's only so much you could charge people for that.
Right.
So it's a strange balance. You know, we can't change that. It's the way we start.
It's the essence of Moskos, right? It wouldn't be
the same. I mean, that's like one of the things we're known for is like our family style servings. So it's difficult, but it's what we're just like, we got to keep doing it.
And it was interesting last night, after you and I finished recording what essentially became part one of this. You know, I sat there by myself and watched the front door open and then the guests come in. And I watched big groups come in, and it was a Thursday night, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a group of six, I saw a group of eight come in. And it was exactly what we've talked about of, it was a sense of camaraderie. And one group was clearly a family, one group was clearly not. You know, they had obviously been here before and just sort of ordered the menu,
mm-hmm.
right? Knowing that you would not want to come here on a date night, in my opinion, unless somehow you had the discipline to order a salad and one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
people do it.
Yeah.
You know, we do offer some half portions of things, but yeah, you want to maybe just order like two things
right.
if you're coming on a date night. If you want to try everything, and not to say people don't come here with two
right.
people and order everything on the menu with the purpose of bringing home
taking
leftovers, because that actually happens more often than you'd think. But really to... like the whole experience that a lot of people do is to come in a bigger group, like 6, 8, 10 people or more. Or, you know, they'll tell me if I'm waiting on tables, well, this is what we want now. And we're 20 people. So tell us how much we need for the table.
Mm-hmm.
And that's easy. Like, and then we serve the table. Everybody's, you know, gets some of everything. And most people love it that way.
It's great because it's such a, even though the menu isn't that big, it's a big variety of tastes.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I say this now having eaten, I think, the whole menu, maybe not chicken cacciatore.
Or sausage.
That's right. But I had a lot of food.
Mm-hmm.
And then I brought it home to my family and they had a lot of food. And I think that's one of the things that really makes it fun. This is a great place to come bring a big group
mm-hmm.
and enjoy socializing. And I think we talked about it gets loud in here. The jukebox is always playing a lot of Italian standards. It's noisy. People are catching up.
Yeah, we talked about that. It's just, you know, some people, if you want to come for a quiet date night, I wouldn't recommend us for that particular occasion. But if you want to come for a party or a birthday or a celebration where you want to have fun and maybe sing a little and maybe dance a little, play some songs on the jukebox, it's going to be loud. I mean, the building is so old, and literally we were talking about this as well. The walls are literally plywood,
right?
And I've like explored acoustic options and there's not many. So it's just loud. And you know, some people will be like, can you put us in a quiet corner? And I'm like, I don't think that exists, but I'll try. You know, it's just a loud and fun place. If you know, it's, I like that environment. I like when I look in the front and I see people having fun or see people dancing or smiling or laughing, it makes me feel happy. And that's definitely more what we're about.
I grew up in a big Italian family. And to me, it reminds me of Sunday afternoon dinners in that family or St. Joseph's Day gatherings or big events like that where it is loud and
mm-hmm.
people, you know, people are catching up and people are being silly. And again, it feels very much to me like stepping kind of into, you know, into the casual dining room at home with a whole bunch of relatives and friends.
Right, which like we talked about as well because we were just all so loud. Like my whole family were loud. My mom, you know, she'd be talking and, you know, someone would be like, why are you yelling? She's like, I'm not yelling. Like, this is how I speak. This is how I'm speaking. And it's just, you know, your voice naturally escalates when you get excited. Or
right.
at least everybody in my family, that's what happens. And it's just, you know, what I'm used to. I like it. I like the noise and a little bit of chaos and, you know, seeing people have fun.
And that all blends really well. I think that's Mosca's in a nutshell. It's fun. The family platters, the big groups, the kind of loudness of it. It's a great place to bring kids.
Oh, yeah. Because people will call, and they'll say, can we bring our kids? And I'm like, yes, you could bring your kids. My kids are here. So please bring your kids. Like, it's definitely, it's loud. Nobody's going to hear them.
Right.
If they're crying.
Yeah. I think, again, we're recording this right at Labor Day weekend. Decadence is in town, a big group. I think anything you come in town for that's a big event, I might exclude Mardi Gras because Mardi Gras is crazy and trying to get out of places. But if you're coming in town with a big group or for a big event or a Saints game, you're going to make a weekend of it, this is a great place to get 4 or 6 or 8 or 10 friends and either get a ride share if you have a car. Come on out here.
A lot of people, and it just like took off. Like every now and then we would see it, but now everybody's doing it where they rent a party bus.
Oh.
And they make it like a night, which is a good excuse to rent a party bus.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't really take that long to get here, but it is a bit of a destination, and mm-hmm. it's a good excuse. You could come, you could have fun, you could drink, and then you have a party bus to take you back home, and it's a great
option.
That's a
great idea. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, I drove it from downtown in the beginning of rush hour to see how long it would take, and it was about 25 minutes, which wasn't bad. If I had left at 5 o'clock, it would have been worse. I left at 3:30 or so. Today, I came across a Huey P., and it took 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. So it's not far. But you're right. That's a wonderful idea. If you're coming from out of town, you don't have a car anyway.
Right.
You could do that. You could then stop at a bar or a brewery or something like that.
Yeah, a lot of people do that. They'll come here. They'll eat. They'll drink. They'll have fun. They'll get back on the bus. And the bus, they're going out after. And I love that. Yeah. I'm like, if I didn't work here, I would want to do that.
It's perfect. Because it's time on the way and on the way back. So one thing we forgot to mention when we're talking about the menu are desserts. So your dessert menu is not long, but it is well regarded.
Well, one thing in particular that's special to us, and I don't think I've seen any, I don't think exists really anywhere else, is pineapple fluff.
Yeah, so can you describe what that is?
That is heavy whipping cream. We whip the cream, melted marshmallows, crushed pineapple, some vanilla, some powdered sugar, and it's kind of like a little fluffy, like, pineapple. It kind of reminds me a little bit of ambrosia in a mm-hmm. certain way. And then we top it with graham cracker crumbs. And so either people like absolutely love it and must have it after their dinner, or they're like, no thanks, I don't like pineapple. It's definitely unique.
Yes.
We offer a few other things. We offer cannolis from Bricados, which I absolutely adore. Yeah. We offer a chocolate cake from Bay's Bakery in Gretna, which is a little family bakery. It's just the pineapple fluff is what is like our thing.
And it's unique.
Yeah, and it's unique.
I don't think anywhere else sells anything like it in the city. Yeah, so that's another thing. In fact, so last night I did eat the cannoli, so I did not bring any home. And the daughter, I have a daughter, listeners know, Olivia, woke up this morning and ate leftover meatball and pasta from Mosca's because she enjoyed it so much last night. She was very disappointed I did not bring the dessert home, but she'll get it when we come back. What do you think about, so now, you've chosen this life to continue the family business. Mm-hmm. What do you think about when you see it going forward, or are you just so focused on tonight's?
Yeah, we talked about this and I feel like I don't even know. I can't, people talk about a 5-year plan and I'm like, I barely have like a 1-week plan. I don't know what's going on, but it's just, kind of touch and go. Does my mom want to stay in the kitchen? Mm-hmm. She one day is like, I quit. And the next day she's like, what would I do? It's our social life.
Yeah.
If she were to retire, that would be a different story, because then it's who's going to take over the kitchen. It's a family restaurant. I don't know what would happen. I don't want to see it not exist anymore, so I'd like to continue it in some form.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking about that a lot, but I don't have an answer.
Yeah. I don't know if you know Scott Craig. He owns Katie's. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I love that.
And his mom, and gosh, I don't know if she's still doing it or if she's still around, but she was old, certainly before COVID, she was older, and she gradually transitioned to almost the greeter, right? She wasn't quite the person who would seat you, but she was at the front door, right, and would say hi,
right?
And I think Scott talked about it was a way to continue to be close to his mom and for his mom to right. be involved, right?
Yeah,
it was kind of a neat
it's
transition.
Kind of like a purpose. Like, yeah. you know, it's a place, it's something to do. It's a place to see people. I think it's good mm-hmm. for all of us, really, in a way, you know. My dad, when he was very sick, he had cancer. The last 2 weeks of his life, he, you know, he was at home because he was sick, but all up before that, it was only 2 weeks that he was not at the restaurant before he died. He would come in and he would make oysters and he would just hang out because this was like his spot, you know, and it right. was good for him. And I'm honestly convinced like it's one of the reasons he lived so long too, because mm-hmm. it's just like it's a purpose, you know, it's a source of laughter and challenges and you're meeting new people and it's something to do every day.
Well, and I think, look, you guys are an institution, you know, again, 1946, you have had generations of people come through, right? And I am sure you get the experience that we did, that people walk in every week and they are bringing their grandkids.
Right.
Or they're telling stories about when they were little and, mm-hmm. you know, it's a 70-year-old man telling the story.
Right, which I love. I love it when people right. tell me stories about my dad or about when they right. used to come.
And I think that's part of the restaurant business is hard. You spend mm-hmm. an awful lot of time here. But at least what I saw with my family and what I've heard you describe with your mom and your dad and your ancestors is like that you're really into the community. You are a part of the mm-hmm. community, and that is really sustaining through the times when it's crazy in the kitchen or business mm-hmm. is slow or business is nuts or, you know, right. whatever you're doing. And I can only imagine it was that way with your dad and now with your mom and, mm-hmm. and now you, right? You guys are part of the fabric.
Right.
And that's unique mm-hmm. and really special, you know?
Right. My dad was like a fixture, really. He, yeah. you know, he, nothing really bothered him, it seemed like, on the surface, you know? And so problems would come up. He'd deal with them. He was very calm. You know, for me, it's I'm still working on that. I'm like a work in progress. You know, when a problem arises in the front, it could be very, it's personal plus it's business. And it's something that I'm still like trying to work through. And then, like you said, you're working with the community and there's all different sorts of people who like all different things, you know? And so you're learning how to respond to different kinds of people, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe if they're not so nice, you're controlling anger issues. Or maybe if they're, you know, they're funny or they joke with you, or you just learn to interact with all different kinds of people. And I think that's so important just in any business.
Yeah. And I think in a restaurant, in a place like this, when you walk in the front door at Mosca's, there's a reputation, you know, there's an expectation. Certainly not maybe for somebody who's new, but for a large portion of your clientele, they're not new customers.
Right.
And this is sort of a place where they can be themselves.
Mm-hmm, right? Exactly. That's what I would like, you know, it to be a place where, you know, people can relax and enjoy and have fun with their family. And I mean, hang out. You're going to be here a while. Food takes a long time to cook. Like
that's the other thing. You guys cook everything to mm-hmm. order.
Right.
So not only is it fresh, but you cook it to order.
Right.
So, you know, this is not an in-and-out place.
No,
this
it's not an in-and-out place.
Come hang out, have a drink,
relax, have fun.
Yeah.
Have a drink.
Yeah.
That's what I like to see.
I don't know. I think however it ended up that you ended up staying and choosing to come back into the business, it's exciting to me to see that continue and to see and hear your enthusiasm. And since we're getting to do this again, I'm going to say on the air what I didn't get to say yesterday. I put it in our Facebook group. We're going to work with you, and we're going to do a Beyond Bourbon Street event. We're going to have a dinner, and we'll bring some books if people want to buy books and have me sign books or whatever. But we will figure that out far enough in advance to not mess up the schedule here at Mosca's and give people time. But we'll get a couple tables, and we'll bring some people out and get
Very
that experience.
Cool.
Now you got me thinking maybe we'll get a party bus and do that.
You
make
should get
a whole,
a party bus.
Make
I
a whole
recommend.
Evening of it, right?
Yes.
Lisa, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
If you're listening, we're going to put links in the show notes to not only our partners and sponsors, but to Mosca's. One thing I don't know that we mentioned this time, you really want to make reservations.
Yes.
What's the schedule these days?
We're open Wednesday through Saturday. We start at 5. Our last reservation's usually from 8 to 8:30-ish, and we close when everybody's done.
Right.
So
I remember that. So you definitely want to make reservations. You want to make a plan, and particularly you got a group of people, you know, make it an evening, make it an event. We'll put all that in the show notes so that people can connect with you guys. If you do that, let them know that you heard about it on the podcast so that we get that feedback. And again, you can look for us to come up with an event in the next couple months or so. We'll figure out that schedule. Again, I appreciate it. I know I can hear the noise in the kitchen. We're getting close to opening time. I want to say thanks again to you, Lisa.
Thank you.
I also want to say thanks to our mutual friend, Scott Walker, congressman in Jefferson Parish, also has a media company and is a Brother Martin grad like me. He connected me to you. So I appreciate that, Scott, when you listen to this. And at this point, I'm going to turn it over to my own kids so they can close it out. Thank you.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do.
Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.